Hi, this is Trina, and welcome to Parenting for Liberation Podcast. I'm excited to announce our special innovation mini-series that will be happening, and we will be talking about Parenting for Liberation's inaugural Black Parent Innovation Fund, which we launched on Juneteenth in 2020. We'll be highlighting some of the fellows and their innovative projects on the course of this mini-series. And this innovation lab, for folks who are not familiar with it, was an intentional initiative to support the ingenuity and creativity and resourcefulness of Black parents. Through this initiative, we were able to provide each of our fellows funding to test their idea and also wraparound support, including trainings, in-person and virtual workshops, in addition to access to healing resources and coaching. And with that, we were supporting parents who are driving the solutions to our problems. Who else to go to than our own community to find solutions to our community's problems? And why not go to Black parents, right? The folks who are building and supporting and nurturing the next generation. Yeah. And so as a part of this initiative, parents were invited to apply for an innovative idea that they wanted to test in one of Parenting for Liberation's areas of work, which included healing, education, and community. Did you also know that Parenting for Liberation received an innovation grant as our initial seed funding? And look at what's possible. There is an organization now, and you're listening to a podcast. We do workshops. And I had the opportunity through this initiative to pay it forward and invite other Black parents in to resource them to test ideas that they might have about how can we support our families? How can we support our children? How can we support our communities in building a bold, bright, dynamic, liberatory future for all of us? So as part of our recap, actually, for this first episode, we'll be sharing an incredible conversation that happened amongst these brilliant Black women that happened at our innovation celebration. So we launched the program in June at Juneteenth, and we concluded in February for Black History / Black Futures Month. And we had this beautiful celebration in person where the fellows got to share about their projects. And so you'll be hearing a little bit of that over the course of this series. But for our first episode, the fellows were able to present in a live audience. And we also had this beautiful panel discussion with amazing speakers, including myself, moi, but also the incredible Candy Lewis of Positive Results Center, Casey Patterson of the Black Equity Collective, and Brittany Brathway of Kimbertive and also the Homegirl Box. So these incredible speakers were moderated by none other than the incredible Nicole Vick, the style vixen and also fashionista and author in her own right, moderated this discussion. And we wanted to make sure that you had a chance to hear that discussion and not miss it. So for part one of our series, you'll have the whole panel discussion live right now. Please enjoy. Raising Black children in the United States can be really scary. And as a Black mother, I realized I was parenting from fear. And I wanted to make a commitment to Parent for Liberation. You are listening to Parenting for Liberation podcast. And I am your host, Trina Green Brown. Each month, I'm joined by other Black parents and we discuss our own journeys to push past our fears so that we can raise our beautiful Black children to be whole, free, and liberated. Wake up, everybody,
no more sleeping. We have a beautiful panel is it morning or is it afternoon? It's afternoon. So you all know Trina. She was up here and was speaking to you all, welcoming you all in this space and sharing some great information. So come on, Trina. Come on up. Miss Professora Trina. We have Candy Lewis of the Positive Results Center. Come on now. Help. Candy is the executive director of Positive Results Center, founder of Black Women Leaders of Los Angeles, a civil rights commissioner for the city of Los Angeles, and appointed to serve on Kaiser Permanente's Bernard J. Tyson Community Engagement Stakeholder Committee. Candy got lots of things going on. And next we have Casey Patterson. Yay! Casey is the founder and chief architect of Social Good Solutions, a boutique consulting firm in Los Angeles. She has over 20 years of experience in the nonprofit and philanthropic sectors and is widely recognized for her expertise in equity-centered grant-making and community-driven design. First of all, Casey, I don't know how you have 20 years of experience when you're only 20 years old. I don't understand how you do that. But we are magic, so I'm not going to question it, but I just put that. I'm like, wait a minute, though. You only 20. So, welcome, Casey. Exactly. See? And last but certainly not least, we have Miss Brittany. Come forward, Brittany. Brittany Brathwaite is a reproductive justice activist, youth worker, and community accountable scholar with a deep commitment to supporting the leadership, organizing, and healing of girls of color. And we actually had a little bonding moment. She is working on her doctoral degree in critical social psychology at the City University of New York Grad Center. So we were bonding over dissertations and writing and studying. So it's a wonderful opportunity to get the chance to speak to all of you today. So let's give our panel a round of applause as we move into our questions. I don't know, that applause didn't sound, I mean. thank you. We need a tambourine and thank you. See, I appreciate that. We need a tambourine or something. All right, so first question I have for all of you. At Parenting for Liberation, we recognize this month as not only a remembrance of our history, as Trina said so eloquently earlier, but also a celebration of Black futurism, of Afrofuturism, envisioning ourselves in the future. You know, a lot of people wanted us not to be here at all. So for us to be able to imagine us in the future is a big thing. This month, we recognize how creative, innovative, and resourceful our community is. Can you talk about the work you are all doing and how innovation informs the way you show up in the world? I want to start with Brittany and this work this way. You ready? You ready, girl? Yes.
All right. Hello, everybody. Okay, so innovation in the work that I do. So I founded two companies. One is called Homegirl HQ. I love the sounds. Homegirl HQ, formerly known as the Homegirl Box. And our vision really was to remind people of revolutionary women, especially women of color, who were making contributions. And I wanted folks to feel like they had a museum all to themselves. And so we started this business in 2016. So I can't believe that it's been that long ago, but I wanted to build a museum. That's what I was like, I want a museum. And I live in New York City, and so when I went to look at how much it costs to do a museum in New York City, they were like, no. And so I had to figure out how to do that, and sort of the innovation was, well, maybe I could just ship a museum to everyone. And so we put different items, we curated items from different women of color-owned businesses, and we put them in a box, and to celebrate, make a, where there are no memorials of women of color, there's no memorials of Assata Shakur, where there are no memorials of Angela Davis, people got to have that in their homes. And so that was one of the ways that I thought that not only could we acknowledge sort of the past, but really help people see themselves inside of those women of color. And then Kimberative is my other business. We are the sexual wellness home for Black women, reimagining the health and well-being of Black women. And for us, that really meant there's so many disparities and so many health inequities when it comes to Black women's sexual and reproductive health. And no one really talked about pleasure or joy or how we bring Black futures into the world. And so Kimberative is on a mission to actually change that conversation and create spaces where Black women and girls actually get to have those conversations that we may have missed growing up. And so I really see that as a seed to the future that we want. Black futures, we get to be here, we're in the future, and we create that every day. And so that's what innovation means for me.
Thank you, Brittany. And thank you for this question, Nicole. So just a couple things. I want to start just by saying, just really echoing, Trina, what you sort of introduced in terms of how innovation has really been our key to living. you know, and how so many ways that we have had to innovate really to stay alive. So the ability of Black people to really have the will to live, right, I think is part of our greatest innovation, you know. And so we celebrate that. We should celebrate that. And we all in this room are ancestors in the making. And so when we think about that, we think about what are people, what are our generations going to say about us? And so I really don't think I'm doing anything that innovative, you know? The reality is, no, really, like the reality is that all that I'm doing, I work, for those of you who don't know, I really work in philanthropy and in the nonprofit sector. Which is a very traditionally white space. It is a white, culturally dominated space. And so the innovation is really just bringing our practices and our brilliance into a space that was intended to exclude us. And so that's the innovation. I'm not really doing anything that we don't do as Black folks, you know? We engage with one another. We hear one another. We seek each other's advice and wisdom and input. And we do that as a way to help inform our own thinking and to help inform really our own sort of vision for our lives. And that's essentially what I'm doing in the world of philanthropy, is bringing those same cultural practices into a very white dominated space. And so that is called innovation, you know? And so to me, I always, you know, tell people on my team that I find it amazing that people pay us to essentially tell them what's wrong with their model. You know, and their model, what's wrong with their model is that it's too dominated by practices that have been meant to abuse us, to harm us, and that's what's wrong. And so our innovation is really about bringing community voice so that community is making decisions and being self-determined in how dollars are both raised and ultimately distributed, so that we can continue to invent ways to not only stay alive, but to thrive when everything says that we should be eliminated from Earth by now.
Hi, everyone. Hi, everyone. Hey, I just want to make sure you all are here. Okay, so first off, Trina, with your bad, fine self. Girl, I love you and everything that you do. Miss Vic, you know you bad. I came in this room and I was just here as a open spirit to accept what was here. And I am inspired by the innovators that I met in the room out there. Some of you, I didn't get the other person's name, but Miss Brittany and, what's your name?
Maya.
I talked to them and you inspired me, I love it. But let me just stop and point over here to this queen. Miss Brittany, I'm gonna need this museum in a box in my office, and I'm gonna send it to a couple of other people. And also, we talk about sexual pleasure, especially as it relates to violence. So I'm the CEO of Positive Results Center, and we address trauma from a cultural and age perspective. And I'm a visionary. And so my innovation is being a visionary. I don't look at necessarily what can I do in the future. I look at what happened in the past. And what happened in the past that was wrong, and how can I and the people that I work with repair it. And I have to bring in my ancestors. My great-grandfather, his name was Professor J.T.C. Newsom, and he wrote a book, Know What You Want to Say. And that book was included in the 1900 World Fair that W.E.B. Du Bois took to Paris, France. And as I think about that, I think, wow, that's where I got this from, that your innovation, your thoughts, they're embedded in you. They come from your past. Whether you know your past or not, it's there. And it's real and it's true. So don't shy away from it. My innovation was when I came from corporate America and I had no idea what a nonprofit was, that I just looked around and you said something like, if you don't see it, just do it. And there was not another nonprofit that focused solely on how violence, interpersonal violence, sexual assault, and bullying shows up in Black people. And so I said, well, I'm not going to ask who's going to do it. I'm going to do it. And I reached out to other people. We partner with about 300 different organizations over a year for different programs. And one of the innovations that we have right now is we are training Black transitional age youth that are between 18 to 26 to be mental health ambassadors. Who can tell you better about yourself than you? Who can help your family better than you? We've all experienced things. Some things we'll never tell anybody, and that's okay. But how can you help your son, your sister friend, or your brother friend? Mm-hmm. We have to learn how to speak our truth. So my innovation comes from my heart and from what I don't know that I'm going to learn. And it comes from each one of you.
You forgot the question, Trina.
I was so focused listening.
Okay.
Deeply to my sisters.
Can you talk about the work you are doing and how innovation informs the way you show up in the world?
Yes. I appreciate you repeating the question. I am, as Candy kind of just described, a lifelong learner. If there's something that I don't understand, I'm going to figure it out. And I can't let it go. It will sit with me. It will keep me up at night. It's going to dig, dig, dig. And so I'm going to dig, dig, dig. I call myself an excavator. I get to the root of the thing. And so I think innovation is just in my spirit because, as folks said, creativity and joy, and I feel like that needs to be accessible all the time. I have always been a person who worked with young people, and now I'm working with the parents of the young people. But in that, I always wanted to make sure that young people had a voice, had agency, had power, because I do believe that young people, you know, the cliche is that they're our future, but really, as you said, they are here already with us, right? And so they're not just our future, they're our past, right? And so I think that it's so important to listen to them, to lead, let them lead. And so how innovation shows up in the work that I do at Parenting for Liberation is that I listen to the young people, and I listen and I support the parents in creating spaces for them to listen to themselves, listen to and heal their own inner child, because listen, baby girl, it's still in there. My little nickname growing up was Pooh. Pooh is still here, and she be showing up and showing out sometimes, and I have to be like, oh, that's Pooh. That little girl from Compton is, she up in her, okay. And so how do I nurture her, love her, and let her be here, and let her be free? And so for me, innovation is in our work because our inner child needs to always have a space to be free and to breathe and be safe. If your inner child wasn't, if your child in your childhood, you weren't safe, how can your inner child be safe with you right now? Like, so how can you love on yourself, support yourself, invest in yourself, believe in yourself, so that as you're raising the next generation, that they feel that as well. And so Parenting for Liberation, that's our work. We do that healing work for ourselves so that we can raise the next generation of liberated children.
That's a whole word right there. Amazing, amazing insights from Trina. One thing you reminded me of some years ago was about sort of forgiving yourself for the way you were parented, if that wasn't something that was done in a way that you that was supportive and healthy for you. So kudos to Trina for really even helping me. I feel like, you know, I know everything. No, Trina be telling me, I'm like, wait a minute, let me go sit in the closet and think about that for a minute. So the next question, I have to get silent with my thoughts. All right, Trina, next question is for you. Parenting for Liberation was birthed from your own experience as a Black mama, inquiring about how to parent from a liberated space. And I just want to stop and think about and give kudos to the self-awareness that is. Like, a lot of us just go through our lives. We don't even really stop to think about those kinds of things. And I think that is something to really to note, and it's really important. What happens when Black caregivers and parents are resourced to create solutions from their own self-inquiry?
Yes, thank you. Good question. As y'all know, a lot of Black children are raised in single-parent households, and we talk, and the whole Moynihan report and research tried to make it seem like the problem with the Black family was that it was a Black single family, and we know that that is some bull. That the problem is that there was a feminization, the feminization of poverty, that Black families are poor, and when you don't have resources and you're trying to make a dollar out of 15 cents, it's hard, and then you don't have a lot of options, right? And so the work of Parenting for Liberation is about how do we actually give Black parents the resources that they need? What if we didn't have to try to make a dollar, a 15 cent stretch to a dollar? What if you had the whole dollar? What if you had $10, $20, $100, and that stimulus check ain't it, okay? We need full resources, and we know that we are starting at a place where our dollar is not stretching and our dollar is not sustaining. And so resources are so important. I know a lot of times we try to make it to be like, oh, there's these personal choices that people are making. But when you're choosing between a rock and a hard place, you don't really have a lot of real choices. And so Parents for Liberation really tries to support Black families by giving resources. This lab, this cohort experience model was about trusting Black people with resources, like giving folks the resources and having faith that they are going to do what they said do, that they want to do. And even if they change it or it doesn't happen as it's supposed to be, that we trust that they are having the best intentions. And so we really appreciate, you know, like this conversation around philanthropy and folks trusting Black people, trusting Black organizations, trusting Black nonprofits with the resources. Because too often the money goes to mainstream white-led organizations, and it's a lot of hoops and hurdles to even get a quarter for a nonprofit. And so we really try to be intentional about providing those resources out. And not only financial resources, I think we only think about money, but it's also like collaboration, showing up, giving your time. Thank you. Also showing up for each other, like in a mutual aid perspective, or showing up and giving folks access to mental health resources and healing sessions and giveaways, right? Like how do we create these spaces like this event where we can bring folks together to gather and not charge them a dime, right? And so how do we create the infrastructure so that people have an experience of abundance? Because Black people deserve luxury. We deserve nice things. We deserve to have access to wealth and all of that. And I know that we've had a history of struggle, and I want us to shift to a history of wealth, resource. And I don't mean like from a place of greed. I mean from a place of us having a sense of abundance. And Parenting for Liberation really wants to support Black families and creating the opportunities for other Black parents to have a ripple effect, not trickle down because we know that don't work, but a ripple effect on other Black families. So us investing in these 8 Black fellows, they were able to connect with at least 10 plus other Black families, right? And so it's that investment that then has future investments, right? And so how do we continue to keep the Black dollar moving within our community in ways that resource all of us?
Absolutely amazing. And you talked about abundance, and I want to ask Casey, Black ingenuity is abundant, right? We have a lot of talent, expertise, knowledge in our communities, but the dollars backing those projects are not often available to us at all. Black-led organizations disproportionately receive far less financial support from funding organizations. Can you speak to this disparity and how funders and creatives can gain access to those resources?
Yeah, Black-led organizations are severely underfunded. It's structural, it's systemic, and it happens because, for a couple reasons. I think the main reason that it happens is because more often than not, philanthropy is tied to relationships. So it's not really about like how well you write a grant. It's not about how, you know, innovative and groundbreaking your idea is. It really is about who you know. And it really is about like who you sort of have social connections with, you know? And so the reality is that, you know, there's actually a study that came out recently that asked, I think it was like over 4,000 white people to describe their circle of, like their social circle. And 75% of them said that they don't interact with anybody who is not white. So it's not surprising, right? But it also means that there is a very like insular conversation happening and experience. They don't have proximity to people who are not them. And they don't have to actually do the kind of code switching that we have to do. They don't have to have the kind of presence of mind to think about how they're showing up, you know, and how they're being perceived in the same ways that we do. So I say all that to say that, you know, one of the things that we do in the firm and through the various initiatives that we lead is we really try to harness the power of connection and being a bridge. Because ultimately we know that money follows relationships. And so, you know, I often joke with our staff that we need to think of ourselves as waterbenders. At our highest, best use, we are waterbenders. The flow of resources has gone in one direction, and that direction is away from Black-led organizations. And when we are doing our work at our highest, best use, we bend the river and turn those resources and that flow back toward Black-led organizations. And so there's a number of ways that we do that. To your question about, you know, how do you secure the bag, right? So I want to sort of separate this out into two different things. Number one, if you're thinking about starting a nonprofit, I'm going to encourage you to really think about it. Because it's not for the faint of heart. And not everything that you want to do in the world should be done in a nonprofit way. Like, really think about, can the idea that you have be monetized? And should you actually turn that into a Black business instead of a Black nonprofit? Because the reality is that you'll have greater access to capital if you start a business than if you actually start a nonprofit. It is very difficult to get funding as a new nonprofit organization. Why? Because it's about relationships. It's about trust. And when they don't know you, when a funder doesn't know you, and they can't then therefore trust you, then what they do is they look for, really, funding is about like screening you out, not screening you in. And so we try to flip that in the firm and say, like, what are we going to do to actually screen Black folks in and not screen them out? But what funders will do then, if they don't know you and if they don't know your work, then they'll look at your board. And they'll look at your board and they'll say, like, okay, well, are there people on this board that we can trust, that we know? And if there are, then we're more likely to give them money. But if there aren't, if you got your cousin and you just need to have, like, you know, your homegirl down the street be on your board, I'm going to tell you right now, you're not going to get money. So, to think about how you structure your organization, if you do decide to get and become a nonprofit, you really have to think about, how do I build credibility? How do I build credibility? And I also want to say that I'm talking in a very, like, formal kind of way, right? And recognizing that I'm coming from this very, like, institutional perspective of, like, how do you get money? But I also want to recognize that just because you don't have money doesn't mean that your idea isn't worth pursuing. Absolutely. And I think that Trina and others like Trina can attest that we're going to do the work whether we get a dollar for it or not. But what I want us to be more comfortable with as Black folks who are running organizations in communities that are providing services that are critical, that are actually the front lines of social justice, that are actually not only serving people who look like us, but employing people who look like us. So recognizing that nonprofit organizations are employers of Black folks too. So what I want you to just get more comfortable with, if you're interested in starting a nonprofit organization, I want you to get more comfortable with seeing yourself as an expert. Yes. And positioning yourself as an expert. And knowing that the funder doesn't know a damn thing about what you know.
Right.
And that they have access to money, but you have access to wisdom. Yep. And they need what you have as much as you need what they have. And so one of the difference makers, and I'm a wrap because I know you need to get to the other panelists, but this is really important. One of the difference makers is that we never, ever show up in a room with a funder as anything other than a peer. And that is the posture that I want you to take as a Black nonprofit leader. You are their peer. Right. Yes. They write you a check and you give them game.
Boom. That's that
and
on
that's
that.
That's how you position yourself for funding.
That's it. That's that on that. That's the whole word. Mm-hmm. I want you to speak to your to how partnership with other Black innovators has contributed to the success of the two projects that you mentioned earlier. And you have about a minute for your
okay.
response.
So easy. I think, one, I think I've told my fellows this, but you don't have to do anything alone. I've never ventured out on anything alone. And I think there's like a false idea that you are, even if you're the only person that's like in the, like if it's only your headshot that people see, you're never alone in anything that you do. So collaboration is always key. I think part of scarcity says that we have to hold on to an idea. It has to be ours. We don't share it with anyone. We never get feedback on it. And it actually never makes its way out into the world until someone else does it. And we go, oh my God, they stole my idea. What? How? You never told nobody about it, right? So I have like spent time, I do nothing alone. I say that for that, like nothing. And so in all of my work, in Kimberdiv in particular, Kim is my best friend. We've been friends for over a decade. And a question we always get is, how can you work with your best friend? And I was like, well, you need to get some new friends if you can't work with them.
Boom.
I mean, part of friendship is collaboration. And so I think that, and I talk about Kim because we were friends and we started being friends in college, which is like very young. We didn't know who, you know, what we were. We never thought that Kimberdiv would be a business. We never thought that we would ever have money in a bank account that was attached to our names. We never thought that we would be on a stage, right? But in the collaboration, like we feed off of each other. Like I have no executive functioning. Don't ever ask me to send an email. You're not going to get it. But I am an idea person and I have 100 ideas, right? And so part of that is like operating from a place of vulnerability and saying, here's what I don't know how to do, right? And then asking for help. And I know that that's very hard because we were taught that we have to do everything and we have to be the best of everything. You actually don't, right? There's someone who knows something that you don't. So I work in collaboration in that way. And the second is the best lesson I've ever had in accountability is doing something in collaboration, is how I show up for myself and my people. And being in collaboration in all of my businesses has been one small step of how I show up for the world. So if I can show up for my partners, I show up for the world in that way. And that's it.
Yeah, I love that. You know, one of the things that I promised myself in 2023, no gatekeeping. We don't gatekeep. If I know something and you need to know it, I'm going to tell you. I'm not going to be like, well, you figure it out. We need to share. Okay, last question for Candy. Positive Results Center is intentional about serving youth using strategies that are culturally relevant. Why is this important, and what happens when cultural understanding is not considered when generating solutions for a group of people?
Ooh, that's a good question. So first off, I'm a Black woman, married for 40 years to a crazy Black man. I'm crazy too, y'all. He crazy, I'm crazy. I have 3 Black children. My oldest daughter, Vanessa. Oh, so wait, back it up. I'm Candy Rochelle. My oldest daughter is Vanessa Rochelle. She is a queer woman of color. She identifies as a fairy, princess, mermaid, gangster for the revolution. I see her, I know who she is, and I appreciate her. We are Black people. We are dynamic, intelligent, innovative, and it is up to us to build our future. So I do so with my culture, with my Blackness, my unapologetic Blackness. I will create the world. I may not be able to do it. She can't send an email. I am a visionary, so I may not be able to build it, but I can create it, and then I can hire people to help me build it.
That's right. Now, last question. I just want last question. One word. Okay. What is your vision for your and our collective Black future in one word? Yes. We start at the top with you.
Okay. I'll just say liberation.
Say one word now.
Oh, liberation.
Okay.
Don't say no sentence, just the word.
One word.
Self. Self.
Thriving.
Joy.
Yeah. Thank you so much. This was a beautiful panel. Thank you. Give them a hand, please.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Parenting for Liberation. I hope something on this episode will inspire you on your parenting journey. Please like us on all social media at Parenting for Liberation. Until next time, let's get free, y'all.